Welcome back to the Behind the Play podcast. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined by someone I admire a ton in the industry, the one and only Avery Lewis McDougall of the Hockey News and many different outlets. I mean, you can tag yourself and everywhere you work, but thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. You cover the Oilers, obviously back-to-back cup runs. But before we get started, I'm curious. I haven't really I've talked to you online a bunch, but we haven't really connected face to face. At all. Obviously, you're in Edmonton, I'm in Ottawa, but what's maybe tell us a little bit about your journey as a sports journalist. What made you want to kind of cover the Oilers and cover the Stingers and cover a bunch of different sports? Was there kind of a moment that stood out for you as a kid that kind of made you want to go into this profession?
Oh yeah, like you talked when my parents, my family, friends, even back when I was like 4 or 5 years old, they knew they could see Avery doesn't to be in sports media in some form of fashion, be it as a broadcaster, be the journalist. And my original vision for me wasn't, I mean, I've always been a fan of all sports, hockey, but my original vision was to be like a Chick Hearn doing Lakers broadcast. Like my first goal was to be a Lakers broadcast because growing up, my first love was basketball, and I was exposed to a lot of broadcasts around the NBA, watching the Raptors broadcast, the Bulls, the Lakers, and my first broadcast here was Chick Hearn, who had so many cool idonyms, sayings that innovated in the sports media world. So that was my first real goal. And even asked my mom when I was a kid, watching NBA and NBC, I used to mimic broadcasters. I used to pretend to be like a Marv Albert. I used to mimic when I was like 5 years old, NBA broadcast as a kid. So it was established that was one of my goals, but also to I grew up playing sports. I was an athlete as a kid. I grew up playing basketball, tennis, lacrosse. But at a certain point, you know that the determination to get to a certain level, like you can be good at sport and enjoy sport, but the passion to get to a level of wanting to compete in, say, a college, a pros, I didn't have that passion, be that dedicated at that level. And I still had a passion for media. So, my thinking was, okay, well, media is still there. So when I was 15 years old, I got on to what was called, it's still called that now, Blog Talk Radio, which let people host their own podcasts via phone. And this is 2008, back when no one really knew what a podcast was. A blog was still very new. It was still foreign. It wasn't like today where you can just go and start a podcast within an hour on any platform. This was still a very new thing, very unknown. So with the Nokia flip phone, I hosted a half an hour show in 2008. And yeah, I talked about the World Hockey Championship. I talked about the NBA Finals. And that was where it really started going off. And that was the birth of Avery Sports Show. And it snowballed into me doing the show on different platforms like live stream, other things. And from that, I got into figuring out, I can do a podcast, I can do a vlog, but how do I get my actual media passes to go to events? So in 09, on a whim, I applied to cover the then Edmonton Eskimos, now Elks. Got credentials through 2009 covering the team. And again, I mean, in football years, known as CFL, like 2009 may as well have been 50 years ago. This was before, this was the A-team CFL. The idea of Ottawa back in the league was still only an idea. We didn't know if they were going to actually return. And I'm in the press box out to a 16-year-old, probably the youngest beat reporter ever in the CFL at 16 years old, a junior high kid, week in, week out, covering Double E. And from there, I got into covering the WHL, covering other minor league sports, covering independent baseball, and doing interviews with names from the NFL and NBA, NHL. And it really was my thinking of, I can make this happen. How do I go to the next level? It was just a matter of people seeing me and getting into different events, getting to different sporting events. And it wasn't easy because, of course, again, you're talking about the late 2000s when people don't know what a blog is, don't know what a podcast is, and they see me as a kid. And they see it as, oh, it's a novelty, it's an act, or is this kid serious? Is he really about this? And people, there was stumbling blocks, we got ahead, and eventually it snowballed again to me getting jobs, writing in different outlets, different blogs, going to school at Nate Edmonton in 2011 to further my education, when it came to how do I refine what I'm doing. And I began covering university sports. I was a part of the men's hockey broadcast team. I was hosting their intermission shows. And for me, I saw it as, here we go. We're building something great. I moved to Toronto. I also covered the Major League Soccer for a couple of years in Toronto. And for me, it was all a matter of keep pushing, keep progressing, you're getting there. Keep networking, keep meeting people. And for me, I never let people get in my way and say, "Oh, you can't do this. You can't do it," because my thing has always been, you know what? Hey, I got started on a Nokia flip phone hosting a show. Let's see how far we can take this. Let's see how far we can do this. And for me, getting in front of more eyeballs helped me take off. It helped me grow. And of course, I also got into more writing for companies like what is now known as NFI Magazine, which let me do feature stories on athletes around Edmonton, feature stories on the culture. And also, too, I think one of my biggest things was I loved covering the leagues that people didn't give as much attention to, be it of course, National Lacrosse League, the CEBL when it first launched, Major League Soccer. Because I've always felt like those leagues in which, when you get on board, when people aren't paying attention as much, they're going to pay you back. They're going to have your back in a major way. That was why I loved covering the CEBL, CFL, and covering rugby league when the Toronto Wolfpack were a team. They really had my back when it came to giving me access and getting me in the door to doing different things. And that also snowballed into me with the Toronto Wolfpack. I had my own in 2020, jumping ahead. I had my own TV show on Sky Sports. And literally, Alex,
That's so cool.
so that came out, just to give people some perspective. I was covering Wolfpack first on YouTube. Then I would fly to Toronto, cover games every so often during the seasons. And rugby league is the, I guess it's the lesser code of rugby, which people don't see as much. But I would do podcasts with players and articles. And on Facebook, I got an email from a producer who was based out of Leeds, England, who asking me, no to lie, asking me, "Hey, we're launching a TV show for Sky Sports. We want a correspondent in Canada to cover the Wolfpack. Would you like to be a part of this?" Now, my thinking is, who gets a job to work in TV on Facebook? This is spam, right? This got to be a joke. I didn't think it was real until no. And the company is called the City Talking, and they do a lot of stuff in Leeds. They've covered native stuff. When it comes to, they do documentaries. They've done stuff on Leeds United, other Leeds properties. And one of the documentaries they had Russell Crowe as a narrator. It's like, oh snap, they're legitimate. This is real. So I got back to them and we started planning and talking. And in February 2020, sorry, January, we launched our first episode. And for me, it was surreal because here I am, I was in my late 20s. I'm a kid of Edmonton with a TV show in the UK. And that to me was like seeing myself, Alex, in an advertisement on Sky Sports, the largest sports station in the UK,
It's huge.
was surreal. And unfortunately, COVID ruined, COVID ended that run, unfortunately. It was weird. It was weird. It was weird reading the UK p newspapers and seeing the show's been canceled. That to me is like, oh, that kind of sucks. Like, but it is what is though. And that turned into, again, more attention, me getting on with the hockey news. Thanks to he's now a Daily Faceoff, but Stephen Ellis brought me into the hockey news to be someone who, at first, 2021, I needed a new job. He brought me on to cover playoff coverage in 2021. So my first beat with that was playoff coverage 2021, and eventually being the main voice of covering the Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights. And from there, I covered a lot of events around the league. I covered the World Juniors that were canceled, and I covered Hockey of Fame inductions. That's where I am now when it comes to with the hockey news, doing every sports show still. And also, we've also relaunched our old show on Yahoo, which was known as Zone Time. We're bringing that back as Alleged Stats, which was a show that I did with myself, Julie McKenzie, Tic Tac Tomar, Sam Chang, which we tried to dive into the hockey. We did it as a show where, all the hosts or most of the hosts are people of color. And that to me was a great show to do because we challenged a lot of hockey's institutions. We got into, of course, the top stories, but we also talked about Kyle Beach. We talked about Hockey Canada. We were honest about it. We didn't pull any punches. And we do it to an extent also too on Third Intermission, which was our All Black hockey show, which we just had our live show in downtown Toronto. So it's a lot of shows, a lot of platforms, but here I am now, trying to continue to push the culture forward as someone who works for a lot of platforms and is mainly independent. But, I try to be that guy who will push sports media forward. I like to give back to other people who are in other platforms. And for me, one thing I think people realize that, I'm a black guy working in Edmonton, Alberta, in media. There's not many of us. There are not many of us in general who work in sports media in Canada who are black. And it's especially less who are working in hockey media in Canada who are of color. I don't want to be one of the ones who is saying, you know what, hey, if I can do it, so can you.
I guess with that, like, what has been your experience as a person of color in the hockey world the past couple of years? Like, do I don't want to presume anything, but I'm sure it's not as easy as, it should be. What's that been like for you?
I would say you do find, I would say, first of all, you do have your allies. There's people who you surround yourself with as a person of color in this game. I've surrounded myself with, Julian, Omar, Sam, and then also too, the people like the Kevin Weeks, Anson Carters, Amreet Gill. There are a lot of people who have your back, Shireen Ahmed, but you do find people who, I always say to a lot of people that, and it's tough, but it's true because the hate mail I may get is probably different than the hate mail in large part that, say, for example, a Pierre LeBrun might get or someone who is white might get because most of, I mean, there might be a comment here or there that's critical of my work, but a lot of the time, if I do get someone hating on my content, it's almost always about it's race-based, it's why you're worrying about race. Why is this, I'll be quite blunt. Why is this DEI person, talking about hockey? I've been called, why is this immigrant talking about hockey? And for the record, I'm a born and raised Edmontonian. I'm from Alberta. I'm born in Canada. I'm not an immigrant. I am from this country. I'm an Albertan. So I see a lot of, if I talk about things that are controversial, that, go back to your homeland. Okay, go back to Alberta. Cool, I'm already here. Like, that's the thing I see a lot of in which, you challenge an issue and it comes down to personal hate-filled comments. And that's the one thing is that I will push back on that. And I'm not afraid to challenge people on that. I'm not afraid, I don't believe in, ignoring it because ignoring it only gives people a bigger platform to be ignorant, to be disgusting, to be disgraceful. So I will call you out. I will put you on blast. If you complain about it, too bad. Choose your words carefully next time and stop being embarrassing.
I guess, like, there's the Hakeem Olu incident. We've seen racist, Wayne Simmonds back in the day, Devontae Smith-Pelly. I don't really know if there's like an obvious answer, but like, where do you feel the game is going? Like, do you feel that there's progress? Do you feel like there's slippage? Do you feel it's kind of just at the same place in terms of like inertia, right? Like taking the game where it is, in terms of kind of making it more inclusive for people of color, specifically black, people in the game. Like, how has that maybe evolved over the past 10, 15 years? Do you feel like it has?
I think it's evolved in the sense of that it's being talked about more and we're not pushing under the rug. We're not saying as much. I mean, it's not perfect yet, but we're trying to say more. So, that was one wild person. It's just one incident, brush it off. There aren't more like them, Yes, there are. It's not just one person. There are more people who think that way. But I feel the fact that we're banding together now, be it with the HGA, be it with hockey equality, be it with shows in which people come together, I think we're progressing in a way in which we're facing more so head on and not letting these topics die. And thanks to the great work of people like Hakeem Olu, like Anthony Stewart, like other people who are saying, you know what, hey, or like Soraya Tinker, we can't ignore it anymore. We have to face it head on and we have to come together as a group, or separate groups, and say, you know what, hey, we're gonna come and we're gonna face it. And I do think when it comes to progress, you see more people are uplifting the players who are black who are coming up through the ranks, be it in the NHL, be it in college hockey, be it in the PWHL, be it in the NCAA, because you're seeing more and more now. There's more black kids, more kids of color who are going to be drafted in the NHL draft this year, who are going to be drafted in the PDub draft. Hockey is a sport in which the face, literally and figuratively, of the game is changing more and more and more. Like, I look at, again, I mentioned the PDub, Sarah Nurse, you got Mikaela Grand-Mentis. You got so many players who in the NHL draft are going to be well-known players, guys like Malcolm Spence. You got, like, this sport is changing. And the fact that we're supporting these kids more is where I think we're progressing more. And the fact that we're telling their stories, and we're letting them be proud of the fact that, yeah, they're black and they're changing the sport, or they're indigenous, or they're Latino, or they're South Asian. Like, the fact that we're embracing that, and we're not, we're the fact that I think more so we're not colorblind, we're not trying to say, oh, who cares about color? They care about color. I care about color. That's a part of their story. And to erase that part of their story is erasing a part of who they are, and we should never do that.
What would your message be to a young black, journalist coming up in the game as to how to approach the kind of the very white field of, hockey journalism, to be fair, as as a white man in this world? Like, what would your advice be to them, or what would maybe a message be to them?
That's a great question. That is a really, really good question. I would say the biggest thing for me is that if you're coming to the rink, I would say that believe that there are more people on your side than against you. Because when I started coming to the rink, at times I felt like, you know, ooh, am I going to have people on my side? But the more you go up to people and talk to people and tell them your story, be it a player, be it a coach, be it a fellow journalist, you'll learn that more people want to learn more about you, care about who you are. And when you come to the rink every day, they're going to respect you. They're going to see you as hardworking, determined, someone who wants to push this sport forward. And that was one thing I learned in Edmonton and in other markets, that people who, when they see you, they're gonna respect you when you come to the rink and tell great stories. And when your writing is strong, when your podcasts are strong, they're gonna wanna learn more about you, and they will respect you as an equal. They won't push you away as much. Like, that was a big thing for me in Edmonton, is that there are people who be by my side since day one. Guys like Eugene Principe, guys like Brandon Griffiths, who are on the radio, guys like alumni who are now in the media. Guys like Jason Strudwick, Joaquin Gay, Sean Bell. Like, that's the one thing, is that the more you come to the rink and the more you don't let these people say you don't belong, they're gonna be on your side no matter what. And I don't see with the fans, like, one thing you're gonna see, like, even the fans are gonna pay attention to it too. Like, the fans are gonna see you. That's the one thing, is that fans and readers are gonna realize, hey, there's a black reporter, you're doing a good thing. We're going to be on your side. Because I've had parents who say, hey, you know, you're an inspiration to my kid, because I didn't think we have would see or see a black hockey reporter. I've had other players. I've had players, I'm 32 and I feel old, because I've had players in the CHL say, hey, I grew up reading your work, I grew up watching you. It's like, wow, am I that old? I got kids who are in the dub who know who I am from when they were kids. Like, wow.
That's funny.
So I mean, you know, it I mean it's not going to be hard work goes involved into it,
Of
but
course.
my thing is, you know what? Come to the rink, you know, be yourself, and you in large part will be embraced, and they cannot deny what you bring.
That's a beautiful message. To lighter things, I'll try to segue as best as I can. Into very important things to a lot of people, but probably not as important as what you just talked about in terms of race and in hockey. But let's talk about the Oilers a little bit. I think obviously they lost in six games to Florida. I know the kind of the messaging or the narrative out of Edmonton from what I was reading is that they're a year ago they were heartbroken and now they're angry, right? And you think about the video from the Prime documentary, or it was Amazon, of McDavid losing his, you know what, at his teammates last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. As you know, he's 1 year away from free agency. Him, his extension talks, or maybe lack thereof, or wherever goes, is going to be priority number one. What do you think happens there? What's kind of your best guess? Do you think he signs an extension? Do you think he waits it out? What do you think he wants to go somewhere else? What do you think happens with the best player I've ever watched in my entire life, in Connor McDavid?
So I do think that first of all, Connor McDavid, he wants to win badly. He wants to win, and losing again in the Cup final to the exact same team, that burns him up. I know he's mad about that. But when it comes to his future, he's been here since he was 18 years old. He likes being in Edmonton. His wife Lauren Lauren Kyle McDavid just opened up a restaurant and furniture store here in the city. They're not leaving. They've established roots here in this market. Now, will Connor McDavid sign a 7 year and 8 year deal? I don't know. I think it's more likely he's going to sign a 3 to 5 year extension to put some pressure on the organization and say, hey, listen, I'm here. I'm an Oiler through and through, but I need you guys to go out and improve this team more because I don't want to keep hitting in this brick wall of I'm in the cup final, but I keep falling short. Do what you got to do in this time to make sure I get a couple of rings while I'm still here.
What do you think, like, on that? Obviously, Stan Bowman's only been on the job, I don't even think it's a year yet, at this point, but he has a pretty tall like, he has a pretty tall order to have right now with this team. Doesn't have many picks, they don't have a lot of cap space. They need to sign Evan Bouchard, which will be very interesting how they go about that, just because and I'll probably ask you later about him, because I find him such a fascinating player, as he's very flawed, but also really good at the same time. And what's his real worth? Anyways, what do you think priority number one should be for Stan Bowman to do in the next week or so from at the draft and free agency? And what do you think he can do to maybe help convince McDavid that it's time to sign on the dotted line?
I think the big thing is, well, the draft, they don't really have any high picks, so I think the draft right all this year is going to be a wash. There's no one there that's really going to impact them, because I think they don't pick until, what, I think the third round, so there's no, the draft is going to be like a wash this year for them. In terms of progress, I know Bowen mentioned himself, it's getting a goaltender. That team is going to try and get a goalie, so I personally think they're going to try and get either a Jake Allen or an Alex Lyon. I mentioned last year for AverySports.com, Alex Lyon is a guy who I had targeted as a guy they should go and get. So I think that's going to be a guy coming in next year in a tandem with Stuart Skinner. I know people have tried to say, deal Skinner, that's it for Skinner. He's not, no. He was drafted by this team, developed here on a very team-friendly deal. They're not getting rid of Stuart Skinner. Next year, it'll be a tandem of Skinner and question mark, question mark. Cal Pickard is probably going to go back to Bakersfield, and it'll be Skinner and Lyon next year. Now, how much does either goaltender play next year? I'm not sure in that aspect, but I think that's going to be a big part of ensuring Connor McDavid that, hey, you know what? This is our way of trying to show Connor McDavid, yes, sign the extension whenever you do, because, hey, we're showing you we're trying to improve with our goaltending moves now. We're showing that, hey, we need to get a 1B to roll with Stewart because we know that we've hit the wall running back again, Stewart and Calvin Pickard. So I think that'll be a way to show Connor McDavid that this team is serious about getting past Florida or whoever it is if they came back to if they get back to a cup final again next summer.
Do you think, like, if no shade at Alex Lyon, but do you think that really moves the needle in terms of if that's who they target, if that's who they get, right? I mean, Alex Lyon has been had a very up and down career. He was in Florida to the playoffs in 2023, and then Bob took them to the final when they lost to Vegas. But, like, to me, that doesn't feel like, oh, like, everything's great, we're a different team now that we have Alex Lyon. He's gonna take us to the chip, right? Like, I'm just curious from your vantage point, like, do you think that kind of move is enough, or do they need to get like a John Gibson or like a more high profile, more proven goaltender?
I mean, Gibson would be nice. He is open to a trade, but I think the one concern is just his injury status because Gibson hasn't been able to stay healthy. I mean, if he can, great. If that's a guy who you can go and get it. But I don't think the goaltending market is just the best this summer, and they said as much. It isn't a great goaltending market. So, at least Lyon has proven he can be over 900 save percentage, and that's I think Edmonton needs. Edmonton just needs a goalie who can give you 900 consistently, and they weren't getting that consistently this year from Stuart Calvin. Like 900 goaltending consistently, and they're probably winning, and they're probably a cup champion this year. All Edmonton needs in net is just adequate goaltending. They don't need a Vezina winner in net. They don't need a guy. They don't need a Bob. They don't need 925 save percentage. They just need consistently for a playoff run 900 goaltending, and they're good. I think Lyon or Gibson could give them that. So, I mean, not a great goaltending class, but just a goalie who's okay will help them out in a major way, I think.
What do you think, like, are the pieces or thing, like, obviously you're talking about goaltending, and maybe that's the only thing, like, difference is if the Oilers get 915 save percentage, maybe they beat Florida. They probably do. I didn't feel like that series was all on Skinner, although there was a couple bad goals. Like, I forget who scored it, but that third goal in game six, I just wanted to, like, close my eyes and whimper around. It was so bad that, but overall, like, what do you think this team's missing to kind of get them over the hump? Is it just goaltending, or is there something, other areas where you think they really need to improve to finally win the cup instead of coming second place?
I would think a big thing when it came to this cup final and came to success is that the middle six for Edmonton, the forward group, just vanished. And it came, it wasn't a great series either for Connor McDavid, but the depth scoring, which helped them out in the cup final last year in 2024, just wasn't there in 2025. Though that's what Edmonton needed, and that's what they're going to need, I think, just figuring out who can be those solid middle six guys to get over the hump in a cup final this year. And I mean, I was a I've said it before, people know me, I was a big Playdra Skinner more guy this year. They didn't do it enough. I think that could have been a big factor in terms of getting a couple more wins if they played Skinner way more than they did. But that middle six core and the forward unit just had too many off nights. So Edmonton's gonna have to figure out how to change, how to figure that out. And I saw recently this team is in discussions with Victor Arvidsson about a trade. So that's one name who won't be back next year. Victor Arvidsson will be dealt. So you're already seeing this team already working around and saying, hey, our middle six has to be better next year. So you're already seeing the discussions happening in terms of this team trying to change things beyond McDavid, Draisaitl, and Zach Hyman.
I guess just kind of talking about the Gibson part, and goaltending is like, I mean, there's a bunch of forwards in the free agent market, but again, they don't have a lot of cap space. They don't have many assets to trade for, players. Like, how do they, wholeheartedly improve that middle six, without kind of a lot of tools at their disposal to improve the team?
Yeah, I think this team, it's been rumored for a while, this team is most likely going to try and find a way to move Evander Kane's contract. That's the biggest piece I think this team is going to try to get rid of. I'm not sure what team wants to take Evander Kane. I know there's been always those rumblings about teams are interested. I've not heard what teams, but it sounds like there's an interest in Evander Kane. And I do think if they can trade him, that's going to be a big piece to clear up some cap space come the summer here.
How would you evaluate Stan Bowman's job so far as GM?
I would say in terms of I'm talking about just from hockey specifically, it's been I wouldn't say I'm just, I mean, I'm not that impressed. I think the Arvidsson Skinner was more Jeff Jackson when it comes to Stan Bowman. I'm not really that impressed in the moves. I mean, Jake Walman, yes, great move. That was a great move. But hearing now about Trent Frederick possibly
Well,
being coming in for
I was going to ask.
8 years, 4 million, it's like, dude, that's for a guy who is banged up, high ankle sprain. And don't get me wrong, when he's healthy, Trent Frederick can be a very effective forward. But that much money and that much term for Trent Frederick, that to me seemed like a giant mistake.
I was listening, I think, to Dangle. They're talking about, and I thought it was a really interesting thing about how, like, when do those types of contracts ever work out? The only one I can think of actually is Zach Hyman. He got the bag, he got the 7-year deal, and like, I don't like it's been such an underpay, but I don't know if Trent Frederick's gonna have a Zach Hyman 50 goal year in him anytime soon. And you know, I like Trent Frederick as a player, but I mean, at the same time, this team is in win now mode. If you can save $1 million over, you know, under the cap while getting a good player who's a really good playoff player specifically, I get it. It's just like, could you have done that for 5 years, for 6 years? Like, wouldn't that have got it done? I don't know. Like, maybe he was getting a ton on the market. I don't know. And maybe you talk about taxes and everything. But that just seems like a crazy contract to me.
No, it is one. And it's a thing where the Edmonton Oilers and management, this team has had a history of GMs not making the best moves or not understanding how to make a solid move consistently. And it goes back to when this team had Pierre Chiarelli, had Ken Holland. They've had a run of GMs who make just shockingly baffling moves with a free agent or when it comes to re-signings. And it's tough because I was never a Stan Bowman guy in the first place. I was very much in the camp of go and get Matthew Darche to be your GM. I was very much in the camp of think outside your bubble, go and get an outsider, someone who you don't know is a GM. And this team, Alex, has failed to do that time and time and time again for a GM. They don't do it. They don't think outside their own bubble.
It's crazy. I mean, I know you on when I listen to Zone Time all the time. I love the show. I still remember listening to you guys talking about Bobrovsky. I think this was 2023. I forget what it was, but it was just I would always cackle. Anyways, but you guys would always talk about how it's an old boys club and it's just a rotating circle of GMs, right? And the thing I don't get is like, sure, he won a cup, but like the team he left in Chicago was going nowhere. It was awful, right? He made that Seth Jones deal, and obviously Seth Jones did well in Florida, and maybe he can feel somewhat vindicated, but that deal did not work out. The contract didn't work out. That team was, again, as I said, that's why they got Connor Bedard, and they look like a rudderless ship that he left Kyle Davidson. Like, I guess just all in all, like, why does this keep happening where it is that rotating cast of characters, specifically in Edmonton, in terms of GMs?
Personally, I think that this organization just they really don't trust anybody who is not a part of that group. I mean, great example was when they brought in Dallas Eakins to be head coach. One of the first things Dallas Eakins did when they brought him in as head coach was he had wiped off the walls murals of the 80s Oilers. And one of Eakins' first pressures was he was saying, why are we talking about the 80s still? Why is that still a thing? And this is a team in which they, in large part, want people who respect the history, who have reverence for the history. And it's tough because a lot of the people who are the best GMs weren't a part of the organization, won't care about that. So it's a lot of, hey, we want to honor that history. I mean, you can do it, but you gotta think forward. It can't always be about placating to the 80s, the 80s, 80, the, our cup wins. You should be building a history. You should be building upon, okay, how can we build a new history? And Akins was very much in that camp of let's build upon a new history. And people didn't like that he wasn't bowing down to,
Yeah.
the Church of Gretzky or the Church of Messier. That wasn't how he was, because he wasn't a part of that. He wasn't part of that organization. And that's why I think in large part this team doesn't go out and hire GMs who or coaches who in large part weren't a part of that. That's why you see the similar names either Oiler alumni or Hockey Canada alumni. Like, I know this team to interview Bill Zito before they hired Ken Holland, but they went with Holland instead of Bill Zito. So it's tough because this team only feels that our people are the best. We can't trust anybody else because they may not have that same reverence, or they might think they're better than us, which is tough because if you want to evolve, you want to get it better as an organization, sometimes you gotta admit you don't know all. You gotta have people who may not always agree with you in your organization, and sometimes you always don't do that when it comes to their hires.
That I think the interesting thing is none of those like young buck type of GMs have been, maybe they've been successful, but they haven't won at all, right? And it's such a copycat league. Like if, let's say Carolina had won the cup the last one of the last 5 years, I feel like people would be like, oh, I need to hire the next Eric Tulsky, right? And but in my opinion, he doesn't have enough good, like his team just isn't good enough. Like I don't feel like it's his fault. Obviously, he botched the Rantanen thing, and I probably would have kept him. But you know, he obviously recouped the assets. But and same with Kyle Dubas. I thought he had a decent tenure in Toronto, but didn't leave his team with a lot of, you know, in a great place either. So, do you think like if one of those guys kind of succeeds, wins a cup, that we'll start seeing maybe the old boys club change, or do you think it'll always kind of be pretty insular?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, Eric Tulsky should have been a trend of, yeah, this young guy who wasn't from our world but has had success now. That trend, I mean, I would hope so, but I don't know if it's going to change in large part, and not just in Edmonton, but in all teams, because it's hard to get teams out of that mentality of, oh, you played in this league or you worked in this league forever and ever. We can trust you. You know best. And it's tough because hockey is evolving to the point where you can't always think like that. Some people who are from the outside have great ideas who you may never give a chance to, which I think is kind of silly. So yeah, I think if the Hurricanes win a cup, that mentality might start to change where, oh, he's not a quote-unquote hockey man, but he won. So maybe we should listen to him more. Maybe we should find people like him, because if he won, he must know something that can take us over the top. And I hope that changes, because those kind of old school guys aren't going to be around forever and ever, amen. Eventually, they will phase out of the game, and you gotta evolve your sport forward and bring in some fresh minds and fresh ideas to move your teams forward. You're gonna have to.
I think circling it back to the Oilers, as an analytics guy, I believe in analytics. I don't feel like I know as much as many other people, but I find, again, we talked about it earlier in the top of the show, but Evan Bouchard is such a fascinating player to me because he has massive defensive warts and massive offensive, you know, firepower at the same time, and he can be really good and he can be really bad. He can win you a game, lose you a game. He's an RFA this summer. I saw something floating around that they might take him to arbitration. I think he's 2 years away from free agency, but don't hold me to it. What do you think happens there, and how would you value him as a player in terms of a contract? Because people are talking about him being a $10 million defenseman, and I'm like, I don't know. That could be, you know, he's better than Darnell Nurse has ever really been. But that contract kind of still haunts the Oilers. Not that Darnell Nurse is a bad player, but he's not 9 million. He's not a $9 million player, right? So, I want to just talk it out with you because I have no clue what he's worth and how to kind of gauge his next contract.
Yeah, looking at Evan Bouchard, he's someone where offensively, absolutely, he's one of the best D-men in the league, second all time in playoff points ever per game, only behind Bobby Orr, which is wild to say for a guy who's 25 years old and still
Crazy.
developing. But the idea that he's not good defensively, or I see a narrative, oh, Bouchard's bad defensively, he's not a good defender. Looking at the metrics, in large part in regular season, he wasn't really a guy you could score on when it came to high danger chances. He didn't surrender on a pair with Matisse Ekholm high danger chances very much. So I think it's a little bit overblown, the
Okay.
idea that he's not a good defender. And he's been improving. Look at the metrics, and you'll see that, yeah, when it came to scoring chances allowed, Bouchard didn't give that many scoring chances. People a lot, I'm not saying you do, but other people like to look at clips of Evan Bouchard or like to cherry pick a goal here and there and say, see, Bouchard can't defend. He's a bum. But when you watch an entire game, you see Evan Bouchard and you see how, oh, he denies zone entries quite well. His stick is active. He can cut off passing lanes. He's really that good of a defender. People like to take the one or two goals allowed in a game or the certain plays. Yeah, I mean, he's not perfect by any means. He's
No.
25, his game is still developing. People like to take those handful of plays and say he's a bad defender overall, which when you look at his entire body of work, that's not true. That's just cherry picking a goal here and there and trying to fit into a narrative that I think is very dangerous. So when it comes to his contract, I do think Evan Bouchard is a guy who's going to get $10 million or more. That's gonna be the going price for an RFA of his caliber, a guy who is that good on a roster that, that's doing business. I think the big thing for Edmonton is now is to avoid, offer sheets. We're seeing teams now getting bold with those. It already happened last year
Of course.
with Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg. So the one thing is that I will say Stan Bowman likes Evan Bouchard. They're gonna find a way to make it work. They're gonna bring him back. They're gonna find a way to get him paid again, up against the cap. But if you don't bring back Evan Bouchard, you let him get offer sheet, you don't match that offer, that to me is poor GMing. That to me is inexcusable because if you lose Bouchard, who do you replace him with? There's not many young right shot D-men who do what he does in this league.
No, I think I remember texting Mark Spector, my colleague at Sportsnet, obviously covers the Oilers, because I was watching a game. I think it was in March, and they were playing the Rangers, the Oilers, and Bouchard just was like so lackadaisical. The Rangers scored a couple goals, and I texted Spector. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, I can't stand watching him. And he said something I found really interesting, was that you want your defenseman to be calm. You don't want him to be like agitated or kind of scared, nervous. And Bouchard, no matter what, is not nervous, right? And so it comes across as like, oh, he doesn't care, or he's, is lackadaisical. Well, it's more just he's very calm, and that's what you want in defenseman. And I do think like his mistakes, are so bad, but it doesn't mean that he's always making them. Like, it's almost like his worst. Everyone sees his worst mistakes rather than watching him as a whole, as you kind of said, where his analytics were better. I thought as the playoffs progressed, his defense, like from the Kings series to like the Stars series, he completely evolved as a player. So it's going to be interesting to see if he gets paid. I hope he does. I always want players to get their money and run with it, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I guess before I let you go, Avery, what do you think? What's gonna happen next year? Do you think this team's gonna turn it around and finally make it over the hump and win the Stanley Cup?
I hope so. Here's the big thing again that, the Western Conference is a murderer's row. Like, that is a conference where there's no easy path. We saw how this is a conference with Colorado, Vegas, Dallas, and it's not Winnipeg. Like, it's not going to be an easy road again. But when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you can, and Zach Hyman, you can find a way to get back to a cup final once again. I think if they get a little bit younger, they got a shot there again because I don't think you can be the oldest team again in the league and get back to a cup final for a third straight year. But I'm not going to say they can't do it again because they've got the pieces up front that can propel them through a tough series against, again, an LA, a Dallas, whoever it is. It's a matter of you get a little bit younger and you get that 1B goaltender with Stuart Skinner, or you make Stu the 1B guy. It's a 1A, 1B thing with him next year, with, say, a Lyon or a John Gibson. You should be back there again. Now, if you're facing Florida again for Edmonton, Florida Part 3, you might have a shot again at hopefully winning it if you have Gibson Skinner or Gibson Lyon, but I think they have a shot again. That window is still open to get back to the cup final again, but you gotta make sure this team of next year is better than last year's team, I think.
Thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I really hope that the cup finally comes home. I don't care who it is, even if it's the Leafs, which might piss off some of my listeners, but I just want it to come home. Although I don't think the Leafs are winning the Stanley Cup next year, but who knows? Is there anything you want to plug before I let you go? And thanks again for doing this.
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Avery at AVRY, and you can find a lot of my stuff on AverySports.com, where I'm doing a lot of my CFL, CEBL content, Canada soccer stuff, and also do stuff on, like I mentioned, the Third Intermission podcast, Alleged Stats, and my main hockey work is on the hockey news.
Awesome, Avery. Well, thanks so much. Enjoy the next week in a bit, because it's going to be crazy, I'm sure, in oil country. Let's do this again. And thanks so much for coming on and taking the time.
And of course, Alex, anytime, buddy.